Need your daily fix on mixed martial arts?
We're going to kind of recap Bellator 155.
From UFC 198.
Who's who.
Kind of a controversial decision.
And who's not.
I couldn't figure out why, and then it hit me.
Well, don't you fret, because Golden State Media Concepts got you covered. Get your daily dose of MMA podcasts. Everything from the UFC, Bellator Fighting Championships, Extreme Cage Fighting, Invicta Fighting Championships, and so much more. Join us as we talk about some of the biggest names in mixed martial arts. We've got you covered here on Golden State Media Concepts MMA Podcast.
Thank you for tuning in to the Golden State Media Concepts Mixed Martial Arts Podcast. And we just finished up a show earlier today where we were talking about the main card for UFC 200. More of the main events. And the main events were Daniel Cormier, Anderson Silva, Daniel Cormier won. Brock Lesnar and Mark Hunt, where Brock Lesnar won. And then Miesha Tate and Amanda Nunes, where we have a new bantamweight champion, Amanda Nunes. And now this segment is going to cover the rest of this amazing card, because each of these fighters really deserve to get the true attention they deserve. And so that's why we broke this episode into two. As usual, I have my main man William with me.
Yeah.
And he's just recovering from too much partying with 200. So we're about to start. All right, so William, what fight did you want to start off with on the main card?
I mean, honestly, we could put this at the main event, Jose Aldo versus Frankie Edgar. I thought it was a great fight.
The best thing that could have happened to Jose Aldo is that he lost to Conor McGregor. I didn't even recognize Jose. Jose came in. I haven't seen him look this fit. I don't think I've ever seen him look this fit. I don't think I've ever seen him this strong. I don't ever think I've ever seen him this focused. And this is a guy who went on a 10-year winning streak, and he never looked better. What's your thoughts?
He has never looked better. I mean, he looks so strong. He was just ragdolling Frankie when Frankie was coming in for takedowns. His striking was so crisp and precise. His head movement was all there. His footwork was on point. I've never seen someone... I've never seen Jose look like that. I've never seen Muay Thai in the octagon look like that. I mean, he didn't even throw kicks. He didn't need to. I mean, he was just on point in everything he did, and it was a clinic.
This guy here fought like he, you know, many people thought of him as pound for pound one of the best fighters in mixed martial arts until he lost to Conor McGregor. Well, guess what? He's back, because he looked impressive. He looked amazing. I was truly amazed by what he did in this fight. I wasn't expecting that at all. Frankie Edgar, who is just he's a tough guy. He's a really great fighter, but the fact of the matter is, he made a very prepared Frankie Edgar look average. Do you agree?
Oh, most definitely. He was just manhandling him. I mean, Frankie, he just treated Frankie like Frankie had nothing for him. Whereas in Frankie's...
Well, Frankie didn't have anything for him.
He really didn't. I mean, Frankie relies on a game that's heavy with feints and takedowns. But even though he was threatening with a lot of feints and shots... Jose was all ready for them. He wasn't reacting to them, and whenever he did go for a takedown, he threw a knee with a vengeance. So, I mean, Jose was ready for everything that Frankie had, and it was scary. I mean, I don't know if anybody at featherweight beats him other than Conor McGregor. So that's what we saw.
Next, Frankie. I'm not going to touch on Conor McGregor quite yet. I'm going to talk about Frankie Edgar. With this fight and the way things went down, I'm like, what do you do with Frankie Edgar right now? Frankie Edgar, he's a great fighter. He can't go up in weight, So he has to go down in weight, right? He has to.
He probably has to, but I don't know if he can make that. He might be, but if he has to lose a lot of muscle mass, the cut will be a little bit harder for him. But, and frankly, we've seen a fighter that, I mean, he hasn't shown enough improvement to face the upper elite echelon champions of the sport. He's always come really short when facing them, and I wasn't very impressed with what he had.
Okay, but that's the answer. That's, you know, when you talk about Frankie Edgar and he says the answer, what's the answer? The answer is you're too short. He's too short to be in that division, so he needs to go down. He's as good as anyone. But stature is what I think is really causing him a problem.
Yeah, but if he moves down, he's going to lose a lot of speed advantages that he had. I mean, in Jose, he faced one of the fastest people in the division, let alone the UFC. If he goes down, he's going to have to face the Dominic Cruzes, the TJ Dillashaws, and some of the fighters down there. So I think that there's...
And see, I don't see him beating those guys either. He's kind of in an island now.
Yeah, he's in kind of like a Benson Henderson type territory now. Where
I see him in a little bit of trouble, right?
Yeah. I just don't know what's next for him. He's not doing enough to beat the champions. I mean, I think that he could have altered his game plan a little bit or upped some of the activity that he had against Jose because what he was doing wasn't working. But I didn't see anything. I didn't see him changing up his game plan, and I haven't seen that in a lot of his fights. Whether you're going back to the Benson Henderson fights, the Gray Maynard fights towards the end, he was definitely adjusting, but I haven't seen it in the recent Frankie Edgar fights.
So if I was looking at him, I would say you're right, you can't drop him down because the Dominic Cruzes, the TJ Dillashaws, I just feel like they're a little too much. I look at Connor. Actually, Connor, I think, matches up with him best. But Jose Aldo just did Connor a big favor by getting rid of him because I could see Edgar putting together a good game plan against maybe a Connor where take him to the ground. But, you know, Jose handled that. So I think a better matchup for Connor McGregor is to fight Jose Aldo. I don't really see, but now that Edgar's out of the picture, you got Jose Aldo, Conor McGregor in that division. After Diaz, what's next?
I mean, you have a Max Holloway that's rising up the ranks. I mean, they fought before, but Max has improved tremendously.
Tenfold.
And other than that, I don't see anybody. You know what fight I'd like to see? I mean, just to test it out, but Edgar versus Holloway, just to see where Holloway's at. But Edwards coming off a loss, and Holloway's really rising up.
Why would he take that fight? There's no way Holloway would take that fight.
Yeah,
he shouldn't take that fight if he's smart.
Yeah, just as a fan, I think that'd be a great fight to watch, and it'd really tell me where Holloway's at this point in his career. But I'd like to see him challenge for the winner of Aldo versus McGregor eventually.
Yeah. Oh no, he's definitely gonna get that winner. Now, what do you think about Jose Aldo versus Conor McGregor now? It's going to happen. Dana said that's the next fight. That Jose Aldo will get Conor McGregor, win or lose, the fight at 202.
I see it as, the same that I saw it the first time. No one expected Conor to come out and knock him out in the first 13 seconds. And in this fight, I'm expecting what I wanted to see in the first fight, an all-out stand-up war, throw in some of those leg kicks that Jose didn't choose to use against Edgar because he didn't want to get taken down. But I see it being another war. I want to see what Jose has to bring this time. I hope that he doesn't get his emotions and his the mental side of things all riled up for Conor because that seems to be what led to his detriment in the first fight, but I see a very exciting, fan-friendly fight.
The first time they fought, I truly thought Jose Aldo had no chance against Conor McGregor, and everyone thought I was absolutely crazy. And the reason why this is was the fact that I thought Jose was too hyped up to prove that he was the man and he wanted to shut up Conor McGregor, which played right into Conor McGregor's hand. And sure enough, he came out aggressive, and I think he was surprised at the power that Conor had, and he was done. This Jose Aldo, though, this is a different Jose Aldo. If Jose can pull off what he did for the Frankie Edgar fight, he's a scary man. I was surprised at how he looked. He just looked physically like a different guy. Am I wrong on this one at all?
Oh, definitely not wrong. But if we're going on like predictions of that fight, I still think that Conor takes it. I think that no one in that featherweight division can really handle the shots that Conor has, and he's proven it.
Here's my problem with Conor this time around. I think about when Roy Jones Jr. went up to the heavyweight division to win the heavyweight title. That was the end of Roy Jones. And the reason why it was the end of Roy Jones is because dieting down that much weight really ate up the muscle, and it really caused a big problem for Roy, and that Roy never recovered from. Same situation here. Conor literally worked really hard to get up to this time for this fight. He wants to be very strong. He wants to be very muscular and in shape at a solid 170. So he wants to be able to cut weight this time instead of gaining weight to get to 170. This time he wants to cut weight, and that's the big difference. If he has to cut weight to get to 170, he's going to have to cut weight, extreme cut weight. And that's a detriment. If he has to cut 20-something pounds, you're not going to have the same Conor McGregor again.
Well, he's actually been lighter in this camp because he felt that he was way too heavy for that first Diaz fight. So he's been cutting down on that. Conor's shown that he's a true professional in the sense that...
He is a professional, though. That is true.
He's never missed weight cuts. I mean, he looks horrible at weigh-ins, but, I mean, he does what he needs to do in order to make that weight. And it definitely helps that there are new weigh-in procedures for the UFC. You're weighing in earlier. He has more time to recover for the next fight. It's obviously going to be a main event, so more time helps. I still think that he's going to be able to cut down that weight. Although he's getting bigger, he's shown that he has what it takes, and he makes the sacrifices that he needs to in order to fight the best that he can.
Okay. Well, that's a good take to end this one on. It's going to be interesting. Jose Aldo, I mean, he's ready. He's ready to go, and I'm looking forward to seeing the fight between Conor McGregor and Diaz, and then, you know, see what happens after that. We're going to move on to another champion or former champion, and another story of redemption and a quest to get their title back. And let's talk about Cain Velasquez. Cain came to fight. Well, Cain always comes to fight. But Cain was healthy. He wasn't injured. And he whooped up on Travis Browner.
Yeah, I thought it would happen exactly how... I mean, I think that you thought the same outcome was going to happen. That you had it at the end of the first round. I had it at the end of the first and towards the beginning of the second. I just thought that Cain showed up and he wasn't succumbing to any injuries or anything. He just looked like the Cain of old, and the Cain of old is a challenge for anybody out there.
I agree. I just thought that Cain's just too much. Cain's, in my opinion, the best fighter in the heavyweight division. Even when he lost the title to Fabricio, my problem wasn't that Fabricio was better than him. My problem was that why would you show up the week of the fight to go to Mexico City? Everyone that knows fighting knows that you never do that. And he's learned his lesson. I was looking at an interview and he said, you know, would you ever go back to Mexico City? Because they were talking about doing another event in Mexico City. And he said absolutely he would go back. The big difference is instead of showing up the week of the fight, he would do his entire training camp in Mexico City. That's a man who's learned a lesson. And with this lesson learned, I see him ready to go. I don't see anyone really giving him a hard time. I got him getting the title back.
Yeah, I hope he gets a title shot after this. We still have to wait for the winner of Stipe versus Overeem, which is another fight that I'm excited for, but I think that he matches up well with both of them. I mean, with Kane, you have someone that can bring it to both sides of the game in terms of stand-up. I mean, all three sides of it, if you're talking about wrestling, stand-up, and jiu-jitsu. I think that he has enough to nullify anybody, and he's a challenge for anybody in the division. And I think that he beats both of those guys.
And when did Kane become a ballerina? You see that wheel kick he threw? I'm like, I didn't even think he could get his leg up that high.
Oh, man, that was one of the fastest wheel kicks I've ever seen in the UFC. Even Travis was stunned by that. He threw it twice in that fight, and it was like a baseball bat coming for your head.
Seriously, I didn't think he could get his leg up that high. I mean, Travis is a tall man. There's no way. I had to put money on it. If that would have been one of the things you could bet on in Vegas, I'd be like, drop me $1,000 on that one.
Man, he's shown that he's working on new facets of his game, and he's not injured. That is the most dangerous fighter in the heavyweight division.
I agree with you. Okay, with that, Stipe and Alistair, who wins? And I know this is kind of early, but we're just saying, just for theoretical purposes.
I have Stipe. I think that Stipe's power is going to reveal the fact that Overeem's chin is not top-notch, and I feel that technique-wise, Overeem is a better striker, but you also have to bring into account that Stipe can take it to the ground, and his boxing's very crisp, and he's going to take advantage of some of the openings that Overeem has, and we've seen in the UFC that Overeem gets a little bit too overconfident in his defense, and he leaves himself open, and I think that he loses by knockout.
Okay. Now, I'm going to give you my take, and there's a whole point behind this, but I'm going to give you my take on who wins between Stipe and Alistair. If you've listened to this show, I have one standard thing I always tell fighters. Don't go home. Don't go home. Fabricio went home, went to sleep. And I say the same thing. Stipe, he's going back to Cleveland. I'm from Cleveland. I support Stipe. But I think Stipe's going to sleep. I got Alistair winning the championship. And the reason why I asked that question, and does that surprise you that I said that?
No, definitely not.
Okay. So the reason why I said that is because you have Stipe winning. I have Alistair winning. It doesn't matter which one of those wins. How do you think they do against this Cain Velasquez?
I mean, I think everyone loses to this Cain Velasquez. I mean, the Cain Velasquez that beat down Junior Dos Santos, I don't think there's a heavyweight out there that can beat him. I don't even know that who consider the best fighter out there, John Jones, who's suspended, obviously. I don't think that he could beat him. I really don't.
I'm not going to say that one, though. I'm gonna hold off on that statement until, well, we don't know what John Jones we're going to see. If John Jones is gone for 2 years, then I'm not, you know, we don't know who we're going to get. But I'm never betting against John Jones until, you know, especially as long as he's not suspended, I'm taking John Jones against anybody.
You know, this brings up an interesting point that just came out today. I'm not sure if you heard about it yet, but Chael Sonnen was on Joe Rogan's podcast. And he accidentally revealed that Jones tested positive for two estrogen dampeners or something like that.
Estrogen blockers.
And Joe gave him a funny reaction because he's like, ooh, you shouldn't have revealed that. So that kind of shows me that there is a little bit of credence there because Joe actually knows.
Okay, I can explain this one. When you take a testosterone, one of the things that you must do is, like, right after your testosterone shot, for the next, I think, like 2 or 3 days, you have to take an estrogen blocker. And that's pretty, because what happens is when you take a testosterone, your levels, your estrogen levels, because your testosterone goes up, so your estrogen levels goes up as well. And so the big thing is that anyone that takes a testosterone must take an estrogen blocker. That's, you know, I haven't heard this, but that is a definite clear sign of someone that would be taking a testosterone. And that that wouldn't be a supplement. And I'm not saying anything about John Jones. I'm just saying I know a lot about this particular subject. And this would not, you would not take an estrogen blocker if you were just taking a basic supplement that had something that kind of lightly lifted your testosterone level. This estrogen blockers traditionally are strictly for a hardcore testosterone type product.
Yeah, Joe's going to know about what John Jones violated in terms of USADA, and his reaction tells me that there is some truth to what Shell said.
I don't, you know what, I'm
it's all speculation.
You need to clarify that big time.
Yeah, definitely.
There's no, we don't have any evidence or any facts. This is just more opinion.
Yeah, definitely. But going back to that, I think I have Kane winning. I just think that his pressure and the relentlessness of his pace.
Oaklahoma Phonics work for me.
Yeah. I think that it just it's just too much for anybody out there.
Wait a minute. Did the guy who cannot say 99% of the foreign names on the roster just pick on you because you couldn't get a word out? I think I need to apologize for that one.
Yeah.
Okay. The reason why I was asking that question is, you agree with me that I don't think there's anyone in a heavyweight class that can handle Cain Velasquez. Brock Lesnar versus Cain Velasquez. How do you see that?
Cain Velasquez all day. We've seen that Brock is scared to get hit. I mean, he doesn't react to it well. He has never reacted to it well. And we saw in their first fight that Cain can nullify the wrestling that Brock brings to the table, or at least he can stand up. So I think that he's just way too much all around for Brock. If Brock was a regular fighter and he had regular training camps and he was improving throughout the years, then maybe he had a chance. But this is a man that goes back to wrestling. He takes time off.
Well, I apologize for interrupting, but my question was, a Brock Lesnar who is actually sparring and training as an MMA fighter without the stomach issues that he had before, is it a different fight?
It's a different fight. It might go longer, but I still have Cain winning by knockout.
Interesting. Okay. And now when we come back, we're going to cover the undercard of this fight. Stay tuned.
Tired of searching the vast jungle of podcasts? Now listen close and hear this out. There's a podcast network that covers just about everything that you've been searching.
Hey!
The Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network is here. Nothing less than a podcast bliss with endless hours of podcast coverage. From news, sports, music, fashion, cooking, entertainment, fantasy, football, and so much more. So stop lurking around and go straight out to the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. Guaranteed to fill that podcast itch. Whatever it may be. Visit us at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And download us on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Google Play.
All right, and we're back. And we've covered, between the first show and this show, we've covered the main card of UFC 200. And what we're going to do is we're going to go kind of back to the prelim. Because the prelim would have been an amazing pay-per-view event by itself. So we're going to talk about the prelims, and we don't normally do this, but we're going to start off with Kat Zingano, who is one of my absolute favorite fighters, against Juliana Pena. And, I was really pulling for this fight. For the fan in me was pulling for the fight of Kat Zingano to come through, because there was a little piece of me that was thinking that there's a chance that Miesha Tate loses and Kat Zingano's right back in the thick of everything. And so I started watching this fight, and Juliana Pena was on her. Kat's been off for a long time for a number of really tragic personal reasons, professional and personal. and she looked like someone who had been out for a long time. I hated to see how things kind of went for her, but Juliana Pena is made a name for herself this weekend. And I love how she corrected the fight, the guy who asked her a question about, you know, you have four fights, wins in a row. And she's like, and she's like, no, that's not true. I have eight wins in a row. And she's like, because I count the ones in the Ultimate Fighter as well. She's like, no one stopped me. I'm 8-0. And it's true. Name someone who stopped her. She's been on a roll.
She definitely has. And I wasn't too impressed by either of them. I thought that Kat really actually won that first round, and she really took it to Juliana. But after that, she kind of lost her gas tank and kind of got out-grappled by Juliana. I thought that Juliana did a great job of just staying on her and dominating her in terms of some of the grappling aspects, but I didn't feel that she was really threatening Kat too much. So I'm not sure how she faces off against some of the more elite strikers in the division. I mean, I'd like to see her against Holly Holm, if anything, just to see where she's at. I don't know how well she does on stand-up. I haven't really been impressed with some of her performances. I want to see if she can nullify some of the other contenders out there. But I thought that she did a great job of really battling back against Kat.
Now, see, I was more impressed by her. I thought she fought a really tough, smart fight. She kept Kat off her game. And, you know, there was a couple of times toward the end, I'm like, okay, Kat, you can get back in this. You can get back in this. And she made sure that Kat could never get back into this fight. I thought she fought a very smart fight to control Kat Zingano.
Yeah, well, you actually see that in all of her fights. She's always trying to take it to the ground and control them, pound them out, look for some submissions. I mean, she's always training with Misha Tate, so they are similar in regards to their ground games. But other than that, I just want to see what she has as an overall package in terms of the stand-up aspect of her game.
Okay, so were you surprised about the final outcome of this fight, though?
Not too much. I mean, given all the variables, considering that Kat's been out for a long time, and Juliana was coming off some her winning streak, I thought that it wasn't too surprising what happened.
I was surprised. I thought it was too soon for Juliana Pena to be in the ring with Kat Zingano, and I was wrong. She really took it to her. I mean, she really took it to her. She really made a name. I have a lot of respect for her. Just, you know, I've seen her fight and in the past, and she looks always phenomenal. And I look at her now, and I'm like, you know, I have yet to see someone really, you know, she's been on a tear, and I don't see anyone that has stopped her until she starts getting to that elite level where I'm looking at now, and it's kind of weird to say elite level and say Amanda Nunes. That's I have to adjust to that. But the new elite level, which is Amanda Nunes, Holly Holm, Ronda Rousey, that's the new elite level.
Yeah, I definitely want to see her take a step up in competition. I think that she's definitely ready for that. I mean, she showed in the Kat Zingano fight. So I want to see how she's able to match up with some of the other top-ranked fighters in the division and just seeing if she could possibly contend for that strap.
Okay, now we're going to move on, and I didn't want to even talk about this fight, so I didn't even give my predictions, but we're gonna talk about it now, and since I didn't give a take on it, I'm going to let William take over on this fight, on this particular fight that took over.
Yeah, Johnny Hendricks versus Kelvin Gastelum. Tate doesn't like it because Hendricks wasn't able to make weight yet again. But I was really impressed by Kelvin's performance. I thought that he was really bringing it to Hendricks. I mean, he fought like Hendricks used to fight. He really mixed it up in terms of striking. He was ready to take it to the ground. And with Hendricks, he's a shell of the contender and champion that he used to be.
I got a question for you, William. That guy that will not be named, who couldn't make weight, I remember a time where I would watch that guy and no one could take a shot from him. No, everyone didn't want to mix it up with him. And now, lately, I see that everyone's willing to mix it up with him. Everyone's willing to take a shot. What happened to him?
I don't know, man. Yeah, USADA is a thing. I mean, that could possibly be it. I mean, he hasn't looked the same since his Robbie Lawler fights and what was implemented right after those and around that range.
So you don't think it's something, you know, because I tried not to make speculations, but you don't think it's that he took a lot of beating from George St. Pierre and then rolled right into Robbie Lawler and he just hasn't been the same? Or something else?
Yeah, well, that could also be a factor, but given that he's struggling with his weight cut, his power isn't the same anymore. I mean, power,
his power's gone.
I mean, the power is something that doesn't go away. I mean, it really doesn't.
Yeah, you can be a fast fighter and you start losing a step. But a strong, tough fighter, the strength kind of just stays with you. You know, George Foreman can knock you out now. I mean, it's just one of those things. It's weird to see a guy lose power.
Yeah, but given some of the stylistic matchups that he's been facing recently, you're looking at it and you're talking about southpaw in Robbie Lawler, a southpaw and rather unorthodox fighter in Wonderboy, and another southpaw in Kelvin. So what really catapulted Hendricks to title contention and just his dominance for that short reign was his overhand left that just knocked people out. When you're talking about him facing southpaw fighters, that overhand left definitely isn't as readily available as it would with an orthodox fighter. So that could also explain the fact that he's not been able to land some of those left hands.
Okay, I need you to draw me a map out here. What do you do with the winner of this fight? You know, I don't know where to put him now. He looked so impressive. Did he not?
Oh, definitely. I think that he goes up and he gets another contender fight and maybe one other one before possibly challenging for the title. But
that's what I'm talking about. I don't see him challenging for the title because the division is so stacked. When is he going to get a title shot?
He's got to work his way up just like everyone else. I mean, there's a lot of contenders out there in the 170 division. I still think that Damian Maya should be getting a title shot. I think that there could be even a fight with Nick Diaz when Nick Diaz comes back from his suspension, if he does. So there's a lot of fun and exciting fights out there. I mean, Carlos Condit's coming back too.
St. Pierre's coming back.
Maybe. We'll see.
Well, he said he's coming back.
Well, Dana said he isn't.
Dana said they weren't going to sell the UFC either.
You're right.
Holla. All right. All right. The next one we're going to talk about is TJ Dillashaw.
Tisha Tate.
And Rafael Asuncao.
Yeah, I thought that was a good fight in terms of it really showed how time off in this sport can be deadly to your career, as well as everyone improves if you're just putting in the work. And TJ's definitely put in the work, and he's changed in terms of the fighter that he was in their first bout, and he just put on a clinic on Asuncao.
This, you said it perfect. To me, this was two sports cars, and the one sports car, it was a Ferrari, and it was just like you go down the road and it's just flying. And, you know, and TJ was a Ferrari, and it was just flying. But, you know, they were close. But TJ looked like, you know, while Rafael was kind of off, you know, on with, you know, being out, it's like TJ said, you know what, it's time for me to get the 2016, 2017 Ferrari. Because he was amped up. He was so much better than he was the last time. Where Rafael, I thought, was kind of about the same as he was the first fight. Do you agree?
I definitely agree. I mean, it's hard to keep training and improving when you're getting injured so much. And that's what kept Asuncao out of the game. And we're seeing that when he left, he was definitely at the upper echelon of the sport. And he's on the cusp of a title shot. But now it seems like the skill and the technique and basically the division has passed him up a little bit. So it's
not one of those things where you say, this guy's lost a step or this guy's lost something. No, he hasn't lost anything. He's right where he was at when he left. It's just everyone's better.
Yeah, I mean, I hope that he can get back to where he used to be, and in terms of improving to be a better fighter, because I applaud him for coming back from such serious injuries. But it's going to take a lot more to become a champion in this division.
Talking about better and injuries, let's talk about the Sage Northcutt fight. Man, what's in Sage Northcutt's arms? He should have like a broken arm on both arms between arm bars and Kimuras. I thought for sure that Sage was going to be tapping out, and we were going to be talking about Sage tapping out for the second time in a row. Sage had no give up in him. His arm kept bending and bending, and I'm like, oh crap, it's going to snap his arm. And then the other arm got in the arm bar. What did you I was impressed by how tough Sage was in his fight.
Yeah, that was definitely the bright side of the fight. I mean, in terms of the fact that he's been working on his ground game, he's taken some of the criticism that he's gotten in the past in terms of not improving on all facets of the game. And I mean, he took a lot of flack for tapping out so early in his previous fight. But this one, he definitely showed no signs of quit. He showed a lot more experience in terms of facing someone that is putting him in submissions. And, I mean, he put on a performance against Enrique. I was really excited about that. I think that's a great sign for the future. He's only 20 years old, so he has a very bright future ahead of him. I mean, his stand-up is on point. He just needs to work on his ground game a little bit more, his takedown defense, and we're looking at a little Wonder Boy Light.
Wonder Boy Light is exactly what I was thinking. I was even saying when I was watching the fight, I would love for him to train with like a Lyoto Machida or a Wonder Boy so that he can, you know, he needs to hone his skills a little bit, but he is truly Wonder Boy Light. I think the biggest mistake he made in this fight was listening to all the negative comments because I kind of felt like he put himself in one hell of a lot of danger. I mean, he was so close to being tapped out because of the fact that he wanted to show that his ground game was better. And that's kind of the way I took it. I think he took unnecessary risks by going to the ground just to show that he was better, you know, he was better prepared, and it almost cost him.
That's fine. I mean, he's really young. He can rebound from these losses. He has a bright future with the UFC. He's great in great standings with the UFC, which a lot of fighters are a little bit jealous about. But I think that it's a great learning experience for him. I don't think that he wants to put himself in those situations again. I mean, we saw how badly cranked that armbar was. I think he improves and learns from this experience, and he gained a lot of toughness in this fight, which is something that you want to develop as a young fighter.
Man, he was tough because I would have been – I'm tapping right now. I'm giving up. If I'd have been in that arm bar, I'd already be in the locker room.
Yeah.
Now, okay, I only want to touch on – you may want to touch on more than one, but the early prelims – I wanted to talk about Diego Sanchez and Joe who they fought, and it was a good fight. Well, for Joe it was a good fight, but Diego came in there so intense, so ready to go. I mean, at the weigh-in, Diego was saying, "How do you say Joe's last name?"
Lozon.
Lozon. Diego came to the weigh-in and he's just staring at him and he's mean mugging him and he's just staring at him. And Joe is laughing and laughing. And I was kind of fascinated by the fact that they brought up something that I've known for a long time. That there was a study. There's a number of different studies that are done out there. And the guy that is smiling at the weigh-in traditionally always loses. And it's like an 80-something percent chance that the guy that's happy at the weigh-in is going to be sad at the fight. And Joe was laughing his butt off at Diego Sanchez as Diego was making all these mean faces at him and he's going to take him out. And then we got to the ring, it was kind of the same thing. And then Joe jumped on Diego, and Diego got wore out. He got beat down and knocked the heck out.
Joe has made a career out of doing the opposite that you expect from him. I mean, just look at the guy. He comes from an IT background. He has a master's, I believe, and he knocked out Jens Pulver to launch himself in his division. And basically, I mean, he was just happy to be in that spot. He's always looking for a fight, and he thought that Diego would give it to him. But at this point in Diego's career, he's not able to take the same hits as he was before. And this was actually the first time that he's actually been stopped by accumulation of strikes. I mean, he was stopped by BJ Penn by a cut, so that led to a TKO. But this is the first time that we've actually seen someone basically just knock out or overwhelm him with strikes.
And he was overwhelmed. That's a great statement, overwhelmed.
Yeah, and it doesn't bode well for his future in the UFC. I know that he's a fighter till he dies, but I don't want to see him take too much more damage in the ring. He's taken a lot over the years. So I was happy for Joe. I thought he put on a great performance, and I always look to him to watch some very entertaining fights.
Okay, when we come back, we're going to talk about the Ultimate Fighter finale and just an amazing fight. We'll be right back.
Are you looking for help for your fantasy football team? Check out the GSMC Fantasy Football Podcast. Get today's best advice on who to start, who to sit, even who you should draft. From sleeper picks to red-hot lineups, they got it all covered for you. That's gsmcpodcast.com/fantasy-football-podcast. We'll cover traditional leagues, dynasty, PPR, even IDP leagues. When you need fantasy help, there's just one show to hit up. Don't forget to like them on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. Visit gsmcpodcast.com for more info.
Okay, and we're back, and now we've covered the UFC 200. But we didn't really get a chance to talk about the Ultimate Fighter finale. And if you did not see it, go back. Find it. Find it, because it was the fight of the night, in my opinion. It was the fight of the weekend. And the fight of the week. I thought there was not a better fight than Joe Jacek. I practiced it the whole time and still messed it up.
You're trying to do it too Polish. I mean, just try it an American way. Jan Jacek.
Yes, it's Joe Jacek. There you go. I'm gonna do it that way. Like I said, I prefer to call her Joanna Champion or Double J, and that's for Double Jab. Anyway. This was, without question, in my opinion, the best fight of the week. And first, I'm going to start off by not talking about Joanna. I'm going to start talking about Claudia. And I'm going to make a statement that Claudia is the absolute best strawweight in the entire UFC for 2.5 rounds. No one's better. No one. 2.75 rounds, cancel Christmas. She is gas and it is over. First two rounds, she came out and she was handling and roughing up Joanna. Once that 2.5 minute mark timer went off, bing, she was done. She was hitting her with so many three-piece hot and spicies. I thought I was at a Kentucky Fried Chicken ordering a dinner for the night. She was just Joanna just kept blasting her with so many combinations. I mean, it was a textbook situation. A couple of the judges in the fourth and fifth round scored it a 10-8, even though Claudia did not go down. It was just that many combinations that were just being landed.
Yeah, I mean, Claudia definitely put on a performance in those first two rounds, but I mean, it kind of entails it with the musculature and the stature that she has. I mean, if you're a lot bigger, you're going to be expending more energy, and you're not going to be able to really take the fight in the distance. You see it with short distance sprinters and long distance sprinters. There's just a different type of musculature there. And I think that what led to Claudia's detriment was her focus on some of the wrestling in those early rounds.
I agree.
I mean, she was taking it to Joanna. She dropped her in the first few seconds of the fight, and she just chose to grind her up against the fence, take her down, and try to impose her will that way. But Joanna's in it for the long run. She's had many five-round fights. So she was willing to just let the storm pass, and she put on a clinic standing up in those last three rounds against Claudia.
Okay. I on a previous episode, I talked about how I went back and I watched this fight, the first fight, a couple of different times. So I saw it three times. And so I know that fight very well. There was no different than the first fight than the second fight to me. The only difference was in the first round of the first fight, it was exactly the same, except Joanna at the very end ended up catching Claudia and dropping her. This time, she did not catch Claudia. So Claudia wore her down and was on top of her, and she won the first round, in my opinion. Second round, just like I had her in the first fight. The second round, same thing to me, was exactly the same way where I had Claudia winning two in the second fight, and I had Claudia winning round two in the third fight. In the second fight. Once again, round three, I had Claudia winning the first half of round three, and I had Claudia winning the first half of the second fight. And then she ran out of gas, and then Joanna stepped on the gas. But this time, this was a championship fight, and there was five rounds instead of three rounds. And Joanna, like I said, three-piece hot and spicy. She was on her, hitting her with everything. From kick combos to punch combos. She did everything. It was like a sparring session in there. Claudia had no answer. And the thing about it is I don't care if this fight would have went another five rounds. Joanna looked like she was so fresh, like she was ready to go to the club after this fight, where Claudia just wanted to go to sleep.
Yeah. That's what I love about five-round fights. It really tells you what each fighter is about, if they're really ready for a fight. And if you translate this to a real-life scenario, fights don't end after 15 minutes. I mean, it's going to keep on going and keep on going, and it really tells you who's going to be the better fighter in the end.
I disagree with that. Fights definitely end in the first 15 minutes.
They definitely do, but I mean, it's a real scenario in that there's not people. Cardio plays a factor.
Cardio. You normally in a real fight, the reason why fights don't go long is because most street fights, and not that I'm condoning street fighting, but I've been in a few, there's such an energy dump that you burn up so much energy so fast that you're done. And that was kind of what happened with Claudia, where she had this big energy dump in the first 2.5 rounds, and then she was done.
Yeah, and that it just shows that Joanna just had the championship medal in those last three rounds, and she really brought it to her. I mean, she was prepared for a championship fight because she is a champion. Claudia was not. She was relying way too much on her wrestling, didn't change up her game plan, and really didn't change too much from the first fight. So that's why she lost that fight.
Okay, I'm going to make a statement that I don't think will ever come to fruition. And that is this. And the reason why it won't come to fruition is this, that Joanna has made it clear that if the UFC opened up another weight class, one up, she would go up to fight for the title. I don't want her to see her do that. And the reason why I don't want her to see her to go up and weight if they create an is a flyweight division, right?
Yeah.
Is because I think there's a lot of ladies that are in the bantamweight would drop down to the flyweight division to compete. But I will tell you this. If they do not and they keep that strawweight, you are now – with Claudia now out of the picture, I could see a scenario where you have an Anderson Silva-type run about to happen. An Anderson Silva-Jose Aldo-type run where I don't see anyone – now that she's fought Claudia twice, you can toss kind of Claudia out of the picture. It would take a long time for Claudia to get another match. And I don't see anyone on the roster. I don't see anyone in Invicta. I don't see anyone in any of the other divisions that's going to give Joanna a shot in that weight class. With the exception of Angela Lee, who is an atomweight and a strawweight, and right now it doesn't even look like the UFC is even considering bringing Angela Lee in. So I don't even see anyone giving her a shot. I could see her going on a very long title reign.
I can definitely see the same. It's going to take someone that's going to have more of a grappling prowess to face her. I mean, there's some up-and-comers with Rose Namajunas. And, I mean, if you want to say Paige Van Zandt, if they're going to improve better and they're going to improve and become better fighters, they may have a chance to challenge her in the future. But in this immediate time, it's going to take a lot more to get to her level. And I don't see anybody that's currently at that stage in their career.
You know, I was just thinking about my statement about, you know, all the other divisions. And I just want to tell you, I need a 3-step program from this weekend because – I watched way too much fighting this weekend. William, you don't understand. I watched, you know, the RDA fight. I watched that entire card. I watched the Ultimate Fighter card. I watched all the prelims and all the main events for UFC 200. I watched the presser for the Hall of Fame. I went back. I actually watched the first Joanna fight. I watched Cage Warriors fight this weekend. And then there was another organization that was fighting this weekend, and I watched all of their fights. I need a 12-step program to step away.
Sounds like a good weekend. I think they should watch more fights. Sounds like you should do that every weekend.
You know, and I did watch Cage Warrior, and there was this guy. I don't even remember what his name was. He was one of the opening fights. He had like the Justin Bieber type hair. This kid was a dynamo though. I may have to send you a little clip of him. He was impressive out of Yorkshire, England or something like that. But he was a good kid, kind of cocky, but he fought really well. But yes, I watched way too many fights. Now we're gonna go back to this to the Ultimate Fighter card because there's talking about other divisions. There's a guy who came over from Bellator, who was the lightweight champion in Bellator. He didn't lose his title. Nobody beat him. He just decided, I don't want to be in Bellator anymore. And Bellator gave him his release and stripped him of the title. He came to the UFC. He took on a very, very tough Ross Pearson. And we're talking about Will Brooks. Will Brooks showed that he is a solid contender in the UFC. And right now, if you took the current champion in that division and you put Will Brooks in there, I'm taking Will Brooks.
Ooh, yeah. But I think that this was a good warm-up fight for him. I'm not sure if he's going to be entirely warmed up for Alvarez, but, I mean, we see how he did against Chandler. We saw how Chandler did against Alvarez. But MMA math is kind of a weird, wonky thing, so you can't really equate that.
Is that after calculus and before differential equations, the UFC math?
I don't know. It's a whole different type of genre.
oh,
it's like it's kind of like statistics. Then I get you.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, you're just taking all the how everyone matches up, all the strikes landed, and all that stuff. We were talking about Moneyball right here.
Oh, okay, I understand now. Thank you for clarifying.
Yeah, so I thought that he looked great against Pearson for those first two rounds, and then we saw Pearson kind of roar back in that last round. But I thought that he did a great job. He really nullified some of the striking techniques of Pearson, and he landed a lot of his own. And I thought it was a great coming out party for him. And I want to see him against the upper echelon of the division. I think there's a great future for both men. I thought Pearson looked fantastic, and Brooks looked fantastic. So they're going to be a force in this lightweight division, which is stacked.
Now, and the reason why you have to grade Will Brooks on a curve. And the reason why I say you grade him on a curve is this. It is a such thing as octagon jitters, which is a fighter comes over from World Series of Fighting or whatever it is. When they come to the UFC, that first fight, it's so stressful for them. There's so much that goes on that fighters tend to burn out. The jitters get the best of them. They get too tight. And most times, most fighters have a very, very poor showing. Will Brooks handled his very well. You could tell he was nervous. You could tell he was a little tight. But even nervous and tight, I thought he looked impressive. And if I just remember correctly, I think I had him winning all three rounds.
Yeah, it was definitely closer in that third round. But I had him winning. And I watched an interview of his, and he said that he struggled a little bit with the weight cut. He thought that... He thought he ate a little bit more than he intended to, and it kind of influenced his performance, and he thought that he could do better. And I'm ready to see better. I mean, I think that he has a place up at the top of the division, and I want to see him challenging for the title eventually.
I had a tough weight cut this weekend as well. I think I ate a little more than I was expecting to.
We all do.
Okay, there's another fight I'm going to touch on. I'm going to touch on this one. Was Tatiana, who actually was the Ultimate Fighter champion. There's a new strawweight out there that can add more depth to the division. I think she's going to do, you know, she'll do well. A lot of people are trying to push her up to be a contender for the title very early. She's not title contention, but I think she's going to end up getting a title shot way too early. But, Tatiana, actually, she fought well. She did a good job. I congratulate her on her... on her debut win. I just don't think people should push her. I think they should bring her along slowly because she's not Joanna champion level yet. But I'm happy that they are adding more depth to the division. And I know you were out at this fight, so you know I won't really touch on. I don't know if you know much about her.
I didn't get a chance to see that, but I watched the fight after with Andrew Sanchez and Khalil Roundtree. Wasn't too impressed by that performance, and I was kind of sad by the fact that they are fighting for the Ultimate Fighter light heavyweight pretty much contract. And all throughout the performance or all throughout the fight, they're telling the fans or they're commenting on the fact that Sanchez is going to be moving down to middleweight. I mean, how that doesn't show a lot of like. Credence or credibility to the fact that this is the light heavyweight division, and the fact that the middleweight is beating a light heavyweight. So I wasn't too impressed by that performance.
Interesting. Yeah, I think the Ultimate Fighter needs to do kind of an overhaul. I think there's something that needs to be done to give it a little more spice. The last few have kind of fallen a little flat. You know, we've covered all the fights from this weekend. One more time, I just wanted to get William's take on the sale of the UFC since this morning when we were talking about how the UFC is officially sold. Dana will be staying on. The ownership group will stay on in a minority capacity. But the UFC is no longer the UFC as we know it today. What kind of effect do you think this will have? Do you think there will be an effect, or do you think it will be business as usual?
I think that they're going to try to make it even more mainstream. I mean, we've seen what IMG and WME have done in the past. They're huge conglomerates, and they're always in the industry of improving some of the best-known brands out there. So I think that they're going to try to make it more fan-friendly and more acceptable to the masses. And what I'm really happy about is the fact that Dana White is staying the president. I mean,
that was the most important thing right there.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to be monitoring some of these. He's going to be doing a lot of checks and balances to make sure that the transition process isn't going to be too crazy. And in a lot of aspects, he's going to be improving on what they already have. I mean, they've already shown in the past 10 events that they're putting on the best shows possible. And I only see it going up from here as long as they keep that core base of what got them there. And they're looking to improve on some of the things that they've done.
Okay. Now, and also, one of the things that I sometimes don't like, just because I think about the listeners, is the fact that, you know, someone says WME, and everyone's like, who the heck is WME? WME stands for William Morris Entertainment. And they're, you know, and they've worked with the UFC in the past on some other promotional situations. It's a very solid organization. You can Google them and find out. You know, it's a very, very strong organization. So it's not something that someone that you can't trust. So I'm actually happy that it actually went to William Morris. And so I think it'll be a good situation. I'm very curious to see how things go as the transition happens, and that's going to be pretty much. You know, did they say when the transition actually will happen?
No, I haven't seen that yet. The UFC executives actually sent out a memo to the rest of their employees and saying them that that they're going to be making this transition and just really keeping to what the UFC has done to get them there. So it seems like they're embracing that part of the transition, and I hope that it's not like a massive overhaul in terms of employee turnover and things like that. I really think that they were fantastic with what they had. There's minor things to improve, but they're on the right trajectory to become the biggest out there in terms of sports.
I could see a situation where with the way William Morris operates that I've seen, they definitely want to make the UFC a much larger organization. I definitely see two new divisions in the women's. This is just my predictions, and two new divisions in the men's. That's as part of the next change that's going to happen.
Yeah, I'm definitely excited for it. I think that there's going to be big things to come, and I hope that the sport and the UFC are going to get more mainstream and really going to get some of the eyeballs that they haven't before, and I think that they have the power and the backing to do so now.
Okay, and with that, we conclude our UFC 200 Fight Week coverage, and I'm your host, Tate, and this is Mr. William over here.
Hello.
All right, and with that, we are calling it a day. Remember, you can always visit us at www.gsmcpodcast.com. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. I always keep an eye on that, and love to hear from the different listeners. You can always download us on iTunes, Stitcher, and SoundCloud, and Google Play. And with that, good night, and I'll talk to you guys later.